Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. We're going to take a look at something that's in the very top of the news that we've been wanting to talk about, and it's in the headlines everywhere, which is the bailout of the U.S. auto industry. Let me just say now that for the next several months, we'll be covering a lot about the different bailout ideas facing the United States of America as we approach the new presidency of Barack Obama in January. There are a lot of options and debates on what to do. The leaders of the auto industry flew into Washington, D.C. to make their case for a $25 billion or more bailout of their industry. I want to add that I think that they mistakenly all flew in on their own private individual jets, which didn't make much of a statement to talk to the American people about give us money and you fly on your own jet. And they may have an argument to make. Some say we should let the industry fail. And it's the free market, and don't interfere. Let it fall apart and let something come in its wake. Some people are saying you shouldn't give them the money, but give it to the new startup auto companies. Others are arguing that if we do not bail out the U.S. auto industry at some level, then there will be repercussions and reverberations throughout the American economy, with millions of people being laid off from their jobs, for not just in the auto industry, but throughout America, from advertising to truckers to auto sales and mechanics and more. And then there's another piece of this, which we'll talk about, which is the argument that what's going on with the auto industry is much more than the auto industry. It has to do with healthcare, that the Detroit industry is the largest single provider of healthcare in the United States of America, that is bankrupting that industry, that is the key to all of this, that the tax credits for SUVs was a mistake that Congress passed, and there's much more to this than just simply bailing out the auto industry. We're joined in studio by Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, and Dr. Bala Subramanian, who is professor of economics at Morgan State University. Bala and Lester, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. It's your money. Should we bail out Detroit or not? And what are the ramifications for doing so or not doing so? And what are the things we're not talking about that need to happen? 410-319-8888 or write to us here at the Steiner Show at gmail.com. Later in the program, we're going to be joined by Sarah Hubbard from the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, who is a lobbyist in Washington as well. Will talk to us about her viewpoint of what's going on with the auto industry. Gentlemen, America does face a crisis of sorts here. Your initial thoughts on the bailout. Should we, or should we not, help the United States auto industry? Bala, why don't you start, then we'll go over to Lester Spence.
We should help the auto industry, but not through a bailout system as the three automakers are thinking about. That is a recipe for disaster. GM is burning $5 million each month in cash, and giving them 20 or 25 more billion is not going to help. The basic business model is flawed, and the bailout of giving just cash is not going to help at all.
Lester Spence.
It's funny because I am, as a side note, I'm actually a Detroiter. Not only is my degree indirectly responsible, is Ford indirectly responsible for my degree, because my dad worked for Ford when I was growing up. They're indirectly responsible for me meeting my wife and my children, right?
That's interesting.
Yeah. But with that said, I fully agree. I think that unless the government can come to some type of agreement with the big three about how they restructure for what's in essence not just a new economy but a new world, then I think that money be better spent dealing with the fundamental needs of American citizens.
Let me throw out some ideas here that when you see the and David and Otto who are calling in, I want to get your calls the next 5 minutes or so. I want to get some ideas on the table, then bring you all in to this conversation at 410-319-8888 as we talk about the potential bailout of the U.S. auto industry. That there's one set of arguments being made now that I just read before I came in here this evening that are really very interesting. That the problem is not just the auto industry. The problem is the federal government itself. That they spend over $1.2 billion a year, the auto industry, on health care. It adds, for 150,000 employees, they cover 2.1 million Americans with their health care. It costs $1,000 to $1,500 extra for every vehicle to pay for their health care insurance. Back in 1948, Walter Reuther and Charles Wilson, Walter Reuther being the head of the United Auto Workers and Charles Wilson the head of General Motors, had this big fight that Walter Reuther lost. Walter Reuther wanted to have a national health insurance plan to take it so we spread it around the entire country through the industry so they would, you know, be burdened and it would take that money off the top of major industry. Now that, since for some people are arguing, is A, part of the underlying problem, and B, a secondary underlying problem, are the tax credits given to SUVs and not forcing the auto industry to meet certain standards, CAF standards for emissions, and that all those things have to be into this bailout, or it makes no sense. What are your thoughts? Bala and Lester.
I agree. It's simply handing out cash to GM and Ford and Chrysler will solve nothing. It's a temporary measure that may tide them through, let's say, December or January, but then they are going to be back for more unless the basic way in which they do business changes. Yes, health care is an issue. Some time back, several months back, I read somewhere that they paid like $1 million a month just for something like Prilosec or Nexium, and it should not be. I would not want to know how much they paid for Viagra or Cialis, but what I would suggest is President-elect Obama has a very good health plan, and we need to look at it because it may take some pressure off of not just the automakers, but most of the other American industries that are facing cost pressures.
Lester Spence?
Yeah, so at the time when Reuther loses, GM fundamentally believes that their model is sound, right? And in one way, they were right, but what happened is they actually became too good at doing what they do to the point where they actually did not need the workers to have the same level. They didn't need the same amount of workers to have the same level of productivity, right? So all of a sudden, you get this huge worker, huge worker population that's basically superfluous. So, and you're still paying for them, right? So that just points to the short-sighted nature of not just the big three, but just big business in general, right? So they have a moment, and we don't have to go back 40, 50 years. We can go back just 10 years when people are buying SUVs hand over fist, and GM and Ford and Chrysler had the opportunity to save that money and start to think about these long-term plans, but instead they just put it in more product, in Hummers that got 13 miles a gallon.
Right.
And that's just a bad move.
Folks, what do you think? And how should we handle the crisis? I mean, if we, one of the things I'm going to add here, and then we're going to raise the phones, is that when you look at the auto industry, the unionized auto industry and the unionized steelworkers industry in this country are the reasons we have a middle class. And if they go down, and that middle class goes down, it takes a lot of this country with it. So if the bailout is in store, if that's what President Obama wants, the President-elect Obama, and that happens, it has to come with really a lot of strings attached with this industry. What do you think? 410-319-8888, or don't give them anything. Just let them go. 410-319-8888. Dr. Bala Submaranian is professor of economics at Morgan State University. Dr. Lester Spence is professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. And you, like we, are the taxpayers. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. David, on your cell, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, gosh, I've run out of things to say now because you guys have stolen all my...
I'm sure you have plenty to say. Go ahead.
Okay, but I'll try to be quick. First of all, I agree with one of your speakers earlier that the American consumer, the public in general, is partly culpable for all this because they're only going to produce what we ask for. If we made the demand higher for more fuel efficient and economically viable vehicles, that's what they would produce. But of course, we are suckered into buying these SUVs. We like that luxury. We like the size, et cetera, et cetera. We continue to buy them. They continue to produce them. So that's part of the equation. The other thing is right, what you said also about the automakers not having the common sense an acumen to put aside some of those huge profits they were making with the SUVs to retool for smaller vehicles. So, you know, there's enough blame to go around to everybody. I just hope that everyone now at least takes the time to contact the Senate congressional representatives and let them know that if we are going to do this bailout, and I suspect it will happen, that we had a lot of strings attached to this. And you guys can take it from there.
David, thanks so much. Your thoughts, Bala, go ahead.
The Congress has already appropriated about $25 billion to help the Detroit automakers to retool to more efficient models. So they are asking for another $25 billion on the top of that. I don't believe that's a good way to spend public taxpayer funds. We need to hold them to that issue of producing more fuel-efficient cars, smaller vehicles, environmentally friendly vehicles, and so far they have not really been good at this. There are a few cars.
I wonder what you all think of this one idea, then we'll go to Ottawa, next caller up, and is that people arguing that part of the problem with financing, the financial industry in this country, which has led to this crisis that we're facing in America, way beyond auto, but the whole financial credit crisis we're facing, is that we have gone from long-term investment, like in industry, to build something, to short-term profits, to raise the bottom line for investors. So they don't want to see, so they've kind of, in some ways, forced an auto industry to sell SUVs, move product quickly, big cars, to make a lot of money fast, as opposed to a long-term investment that may help in 10 to 15 years and build a new industry. Is that a fair assessment on your parts, Lester?
Yeah, I think so. And that's not just, right, so we're talking about the auto industry, but it's us. It's us too, right? So it's like how many of us are planning, you know, 10, 15 years ahead with our finances, right?
Right,
so this is a big conversation. This is not just about, this is literally about the American way of life. And what I think is missing from this conversation is a real serious discussion about how this way of life is changing. So Michigan loses 315,000 manufacturing jobs over the last 8 years. Those jobs, even if we had this imagine green economy, those jobs are not coming back, right? So what do we have to do in order to segue into that next phase of what America's supposed to be about? And talking about, you know, whether we're going to give the automotive industry $25 billion to sell different types of cars, to a certain extent, it misses that conversation.
You open the phones here? Unless you have, Bali, you want to throw some info?
No, I agree with that assessment. Detroit has not lived up to its expectations and responsibility here. They seem to produce cars that do not meet the consumer needs. They don't think for the long term. They're always short-term oriented. And I think that's a big shortcoming.
410-319-8888, the future of auto. What should the federal government do? What should we do as a nation? What are you willing to do as citizens of this nation? And Otto in Baltimore, you're on the air.
I think that there needs to be, to some level, some type of bailout, because as a consumer, if they go bankrupt and I've just purchased one of their cars, who warranties the car? How am I going to get the car fixed? And what's the value of the car going to be a year down the road, 2 years down the road? So to some level, there has to be some kind of support, I would believe. And I agree with the caller earlier. There certainly is enough blame to go around, but I don't think we need to let them go under.
Let me respond to that. They have the option of filing for protection under bankruptcy laws. They don't go under. They continue to be in the business. It gives them the opportunity to develop a new viable model in which they can, using which they can survive over the long term. They can ask for the protection from the bankruptcy system, the judicial system. You will have the companies operating, but on a more streamlined basis. I cannot visualize that tomorrow morning or on December 1st or New Year, General Motors is gone completely. But they will be operating on a different business model if they file for bankruptcy.
410-319-8888. Dr. Bala Samaranian is professor of economics at Morgan State University. Dr. Lester Spence is professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. What do we do about the bailout of the auto industry? It is one of the major issues facing the U.S. Congress. It is our tax dollars. I'll bring up some other issues here that we may not be thinking about, or we may be thinking about. 410-319-8888. Lionel in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi. There are two problems that I know that I have with the whole bailout thing. We have, number one, we have to bail them out. We should anyway. We cannot let the biggest manufacturing base in the U.S. disappear. That's point number one. Then there's the banks that are not loaning money to people so they can buy the cars. And the UAW is one of the biggest problems with the whole U.S. auto industry. In a way, they should let them file bankruptcy. That'll take some of the restraints off the with the UAW. But we can't let them go under.
Why do you think, Lionel, to be more specific, why do you think the UAW, United Auto Workers, are the problem?
Because of the contracts they've negotiated, they're costing too much money with each individual car that they're producing. It's, what, $1,200, $1,500 per car? That is too much money, where the Europeans and the Japanese, they are much lower per cost per car for the unions. Also, General Motors and Ford are making great products still right now. Cadillac's making better cars, according to J.D. Powers, than BMW or Mercedes. Chevrolet has some great products out, award-winning. So it's not really... Actually, yes, they have to retool and produce other cars, but right now, it's the banks that's not loaning money, and UAW is costing them too much.
Let's talk about UAW, and we'll go back to the banks. Let's start with UAW. Lester Spence, you're looking quizzical. Go ahead.
Well, when it first became apparent that the automotive industry would have to change, the unions cut deals that maybe haven't played out financially. I mean, but people were bought out left and right, and they were replaced with workers that didn't have the same types of benefit packages. So to a certain extent, the union has already capitulated in a lot of ways, and I don't think putting the blame on them to a certain extent is common sense. It is common sense, but I don't think that's accurate in this case. I mean, the union has curtailed the stuff they get significantly.
And I think also the cost per car that you're talking about, Lionel, you know, the difference between that and, let's say, Renault or BMW in Europe is that, A, the health insurance of the workers in their contract is not in that number because it's spread across.
Because it's covered by the state.
Covered by the state, as is much of the pension. So there are costs here, again, that I think we're going to have to wrestle with. How do we create a health care system that takes the burden off the employer completely? Mm-hmm. And so it's a shared weight between employers, government, and citizens, instead of the weight all falling on industry, that's part of the problem. That's what's weighing us down in America. The power of pharmaceuticals, the power of that health insurance industry is something that's got to be addressed. That's why I don't think the bailout addresses it all.
That's quite true. And one other factor that we ignore is that all the Detroit automakers have a supply chain that extends to Spain and China and India. They have tried to cut the costs, but it has also cost us jobs in this country. So, and essentially, you know, by addressing the healthcare costs and the cost of a union contract, or addressing it and making it more reasonable, I think we should be able to solve this problem. But I think the bankruptcy court is the place for this to happen.
What are your thoughts out there, 410-319-8888? We know that many of you worked on Roaring Highway at the auto plant here. There are a lot of auto workers out there. Good friends of mine, Edwin Johnson and others, if you're thinking about this right now, give us a call. And what's your thoughts as people who work in that plant, whether it was white or blue collar, and where you think we should go with your industry? Before we go to Randy and Joppa, are you about to say something, Lester?
Yeah, Mark, I think you... So in the 70s, businesses are really scared about the political climate of the country. They think the country is moving to the left much more than they like it to. So they actually start to organize to put to embed pro-business practices in government, right? To put forth the idea that it's the free market that best promotes liberty in our society. So what's happening is that the decisions they made like 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago, are now coming to bite them in the butt because part of the free market is we as a corporation take care of the cost of our employees as opposed to another arrangement where the state would take care of some of those costs. You know, the cost to educate, the cost to take care of their health, the cost to take care of other things. And now it's coming to bite them right in the butt.
I think those are really important points. I think that that's something that once we get our public representatives here, our senators and congressmen on the show in the next couple of weeks to really probe them about what they're going to do to push some guarantees for the American people if we put more money into the U.S. auto industry. That's a big if. And Bala, Samarani, and whatever, I guess, doesn't even think we should do it. So we'll come back to his thoughts in a minute at 410-319-8888. And let us go. Who's our next caller? I've been waiting a long time. Randy and Joppa, you're on the air. Hi, Randy, you still there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. First of all, I really only have 2 points really to make. The first one I would label deja vu all over again. If we go back to the 70s, American car manufacturers were selling mostly cars with big V8s. Anybody who grew up during the 70s remember 350 cubic inch?
And we loved them, didn't we?
Yep, 427.
Oh, yeah. I owned one of those.
Me too.
And while Detroit continued to manufacture those big cars, behind their back in snuck Honda, Nissan, and Toyota, small economical cars, and we started buying them up like crazy, and Detroit just took a kick in the butt. They couldn't figure out what was happening as we began to fall in love with the Japanese imports. Now, $200 billion bailout, that's a lot of money. And I really wonder, I have not heard anybody present this option on a table, but what would it cost to go into Detroit and take a Ford plant and retool it and hand it over to Toyota? Now, all those employees who worked in that particular plant would be retrained to assemble Toyota cars, and they're back at, you know, probably a very similar rate of pay. Would they be a more careful administrator of that gift than Ford or Chevrolet or Chrysler?
Some people are arguing that Toyota, one of the Japanese companies, should come in and do a partnership with General Motors. Let me, before our guests here, Dr. Bala Submarani and Dr. Lester Spence respond, let me go to our new guest who just phoned in from Detroit, Sarah Hubbard, or I think we called her, I think, save her a dime. Sarah Hubbard is Vice President of Government Relations for the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce. And Sarah, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for joining us. And all the other callers out there, Al and Alex and David and Clint, you'll hold on. We have to go to break in about 4 minutes, but we're going to get your calls and your thoughts. It's a very critical subject for all of us. Sarah, did you hear the last caller?
I did. I just caught his entire comment, and I think it's very interesting. You know, I appreciate you raising this issue. One thing I would remind your callers is that this isn't just about Detroit. Detroit-based car companies produce cars all over this country. If there are changes made in Detroit, it affects many people all over the country who have automotive manufacturing right in their own backyards. We know that there are changes going on immediately with plants throughout the country that aren't in Detroit, and that's going to affect many, many people's communities very directly.
So the idea, what, you can say something, Bala? I'm sorry, before we go to break?
What I would say is, yes, it's a national industry. It is not a problem of Detroit or Michigan, but it is a problem of this entire country. So it's the solution is not directed at any one state or one part of the country. I agree it's a national issue. But the real issue here is not whether we help Detroit. Detroit is the term we use to describe the auto industry,
right.
not the state
Detroit's
of Michigan.
Right, a euphemism for the entire auto industry.
Right.
In America,
and the right. other comment I have, you the know, you three. Talked about, the caller talked about GM, you know, handing over the thing to Toyota. They may not accept it. But I do want to point out that in the Fremont plant, for a long time, GM and Toyota shared the same product line. And what used to be Chevy Nova and Toyota Corolla came out of the same plant. And the joke was, What is the difference between the Chevy Nova and Toyota Corolla? The answer was $1,000.
So, we're joined by Dr. Bala Subramanian, who just heard, professor of economics at Morgan State University, Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, and Sarah Hubbard has just joined us and will stay with us for the rest of the show, is vice president of government relations for the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce. The number here is 410-319-8888. And we're going to take a short break here. I want to remind you, before we take the short break, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. That's 1-877-462-7555. We'll come back to all your calls and thoughts, and we're going to let you hear a piece to be produced for the Maryland Humanities Council here in the break, about Gloria Richardson, one of the great unsung civil rights heroes in America, from Cambridge, Maryland, in our own home state. Stay with us. We'll be back. Don't leave us. We have a lot to talk about with the future of auto industry. Stay with us. And I'm Mark Steiner, back live, and welcome back. We are talking about the future of the auto industry, what the federal government should do. We're joined in studio by Dr. Lester Spence, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Bala Subramanian, who is professor of economics at Morgan State University. Sarah Hubbard joins us by phone from Detroit. She is vice president of government relations for the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce. And, of course, you, the taxpayers, at 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let me read an email, and then we'll have all three of you comment on it. Sarah, are you with us still?
Yes, I'm here.
Great, thank you. We'll turn to you first on this, since I'm glad you, I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Happy to be here.
Stephen Howard writes in, and then we'll go back to the phones. During the Great Depression, there was too much capacity for our automobile industry. The solution came when they retooled to build tanks and airplanes for the war. So we have too much capacity in the auto industry. Instead of offering a $25 billion loan, what if the government offered a $25 billion contract to purchase and build wind turbines and solar panels? This could be done with or without bankruptcy, but it would certainly get them to retool. Labor would work more hours to work. Management would get a big contract. The public would get $25 billion worth of green products, plus lower prices for future purchases. What do you think of that idea, Sarah Hubbard?
Well, I think that's a very interesting concept. In fact, we're very aggressively going after other kinds of industries in Michigan to fill that excess capacity we have right now, whether that's from already shuttered auto plants or from suppliers that are no longer in business. We're actively going after wind turbines and that alternative energy industry. Our state legislature just passed a series of requirements that will really drive the demand for those kinds of products. We're also very aggressive in our pursuit of medical device manufacturing. We think there's real promise there. The Detroit Regional Chamber is spearheading a program where we are calling it open innovation. We're matching companies overseas that are looking for manufacturing capacity in the U.S. or some in fact want to be right in the Midwest. So I think he's talking about a slightly different concept where you pay to contract specifically for those things, but we totally understand that we need to diversify the economy in Michigan. We need to find other industries. Certainly something to consider. We like creative thinking.
Bala, what do you think about this idea of, instead of automobiles, that these plants produce wind turbines?
The first question is, are these plants capable of doing this?
Right, exactly.
Is there a way in which the technology can be harnessed to do the new products? My guess is perhaps not, but the general idea that we need to take this workforce, take these closed plants, and use them, retool them to do something which we can do in this country, not outsource, not send it to China, is a great idea, and I think the new administration should really look at it. The specifics can be worked out later, but I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah. You know, somebody that makes ball bearings for a car can make ball bearings for a wind turbine. And that's the approach we're looking at when you talk about transitioning and using that capacity.
Mm-hmm. Lester, then we'll go back to the phones.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of a lot of rebuilding that we need to do. You know, to think of, so you think about what they've been trying to do to some level of success in Iraq, depending on, you know, where you're talking about. If we could take that type of approach to infrastructure development and actually do it here, we could actually bridge those two needs, the needs for the automotive industry to shift gears, as it were, and then the need for us to fix these bridges and roads and move towards a green economy.
410-319-8888. Bailout for the auto industry. What are your thoughts? Al in Baltimore, you've been waiting. You're on the air. Al, you there still? Did we lose Al? Let's go to Alexis in Baltimore. You're on the air. Hi, Alexis. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi.
Comment and two questions. Mm-hmm. I think it's just very interesting how this is all playing out and how we are able to see the complexities of our economy just right before us. Healthcare, it's all interconnected. The healthcare, the energy, credit. It's just a very interesting time. My two questions. One, bankruptcy protection seems like a viable option. What seems to be the reluctance, I guess, on the part of the big three automakers, or what would be the hesitancy there? And then with the bailout, everyone has talked about conditions, you know, not giving the money without conditions. What would be those conditions? And then what would we look to see to be the outcomes?
There's a great question. So we'd like to take a crack at those. First, Sarah Hubbard, I think one of the issues, both the bankruptcy issue and one of the argument being made by many Democrats in Congress now, is that before the big three get any money, there have to be some serious conditions placed on the industry and outcomes to be expected.
Yeah, I'd be happy to take a crack at that one. As far as bankruptcy goes, we are very wary of that kind of an approach. People will stop buying cars from a company that goes into bankruptcy. They will look to alternatives immediately. We've seen it in the past in other product lines that have been closed. Even though the car companies will pledge to service it going forward, it's just human nature. If there is uncertainty on the future of servicing your major investment in a vehicle, you'll go to a company that's not in bankruptcy. An example I can give you, although it wasn't bankruptcy, it was the end of a product line when Oldsmobile was eliminated from the General Motors product line, and Oldsmobile was largely manufactured in Michigan. They announced they were going to close Oldsmobile in a year or two. I don't remember exactly. And people immediately stopped purchasing Oldsmobiles, even though it was still going to be a General Motors service car and General Motors wasn't going anywhere, at least at the time. We're very fearful that would make things much, much worse because the cash flow and income from sales would dry up immediately. So that's our biggest problem with bankruptcy. As far as conditions, I think that's a very logical conclusion by Congress and others to require some kind of benchmarks and some kind of milestones by the auto companies. You know, we hear a lot of talk about cleaning house and executive compensation and all of those things. You know, some of that stuff is very legitimate. As far as cleaning house, you know, we hear people say, oh, throw the bums out, we need new leadership. Well, you know what? Alan Mulally, who's the CEO of Ford, has only been there a couple of years. He's from Boeing. He is the new leadership. And Bob Nartelli at Chrysler, similarly, been there a very short time. He is the new leadership. So we've been through that already. Rick Wagner's been at GM a bit longer. So that's something that needs to be thought through very carefully, is which conditions make sense to get us where we need to go. And I believe those discussions are happening amongst the auto companies and members of Congress right now.
Lester Umbella, would you like to jump in on this? Lester?
Sarah makes a number of excellent points. So if I'm thinking about strings, I am thinking about executive compensation. That's a serious issue. But I'm not thinking about leadership as much as I am about direction. So the guy who basically is in head of the Free Press editorial page, Stephen Henderson, he actually wrote a piece that Sarah's actually repeating some of the lines. He actually makes a really good argument about against Mitt Romney's piece that where he says just let the automotive industry go to hell. And he's like, listen, we're already making all these changes, right? We've already, you know, we've got one guy in charge of the big three, who's from Home Depot, and the other guy's from somewhere else. We need to think about other modes of other types of strings. It's not just about changing the guys in there.
Paula?
I'm going to disagree with you on the fear that consumers are going to walk away from General Motors or Ford. Ford is not likely to go bankrupt, or General Motors, and buy some other brand. The airlines industry went through a similar consolidation not too far back. More than one airline declared bankruptcy. They continued to operate, and they consolidated. They are back flying. I don't remember passengers simply starting to drive or walk or whatever. Maybe a few shifted from US Air to Delta or some others. But in the long run, if you have a product that the consumer wants and you can sell it at a competitive price, the consumer is going to come back to you.
A quick question while we go to our next caller. Alexis, thanks so much for your really interesting call. And we're going to go to Patricia next in Baltimore. But I have to ask this question, Sarah Hubbard. It seemed like a lot of gall and a huge mistake for the three leaders of the auto industry to fly separately in three separate private jets to Washington, D.C. when you have a tin cup in your hand.
Well, you know, I can't speak directly to that. I wasn't part of the logistics committee there. I'm certain they all have a number of staff with them. Some may have already been in D.C. I don't know. You know, there are lots of small examples we can pick on them about, but they've got much bigger problems. And I appreciate the professor's comment about the long run. I think there's a lot of difference between losing a couple hundred dollars on an airplane ticket and losing $30,000 on a car. And, you know, that would just be my feedback on it, my concerns, anyway, about bankruptcy. But, yeah, you know, we all have advice for our friends in the auto industry. We hope they'll take it.
410-319-8888. Patricia in Baltimore, you're on the air.
I just have a quick question. My friend... mother is living off of a GM pension right now in a nursing home. And I was wondering, is it possible that her pension is going to be cut or even eliminated?
This is a huge part of the issue. This goes back to, let me just say historically, before we turn to Bala, who wants to grab this question first, I think, Bala Submaranian. But it goes back to the 1948 discussion we're having that Walter Ruther had with Charles Wilson over pensions and health care, to be had the wealth spread around in that so the burden would not be placed on the industry. Charles Wilson, head of GM at the time, said we can handle this. Clearly they can't handle it, and it cannot be handled in this new world of 60 years later. So what about the dangers, Bala?
I kind of hate to tell you this, but that is a distinct possibility. When, you know, the Beth Steel plant closed here in Baltimore, many of the pensioners were kind of left without the usual payments. They had to be any restructuring is going to address this. But this is where I think the government should come in and should step in and take care of at least some of this, not all of the payments, but some of it to the pensioners. But unfortunately, I think that's a distinct possibility. I hate to say that.
I mean, Lester, go ahead. You want to say something? Okay, by the way, you didn't know this, Sarah, because you couldn't come in to half an hour late because you had other work to do. But Lester Spence is also a Detroiter, a professor from political science from Hopkins, and whose family's out of the Ford industry and worked there their whole lives. Well, Lester, what are you going to say about that? Then
All I'm thinking about is my dad and my mom. They're actually in Florida now on vacation, right? It's like, man. I mean, so everybody in Detroit of my generation, we come from the automotive industry. That's where all of us come from, right? So you're talking about a way of life that's just gone. So my dad thought that when he got his job, he'd be able to retire, he'd be able to put me, my brother, and my sister through college, which he did, and he thought that he'd be able to ride into the sunset, right? And he's got another 20 years of life, God willing, and now what we're looking at is him and literally tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people like him, them losing what they thought they had worked for. They'd done everything right, and they still end up being on the short end of the stick.
And Sarah Hubbard, I just want to ask you this question. I mean, as Vice President of Government Relations for the Chamber of Commerce in Detroit, how could, as a nation, we allow that to happen? How can we allow the men and women who worked so hard to build the automobiles everybody drives in this country to lose everything in the end?
Well, you know, and I think that is a bigger concern, is my understanding. I'm no bankruptcy attorney nor pension attorney, but I'm not an attorney at all. But the bigger concern for some of those things is in bankruptcy, many of those are at much greater risk as far as renegotiating, reorganizing, redoing some of those kinds of contracts and obligations. So people out there who favor bankruptcy but also have relatives, friends, and family in the position of retirement would also want to think about that. We're already seeing those changes occurring in retiree health care, and there are significant changes happening there. Now people know they can fall back on the Medicare, you know, at some point, but boy, these are all really big, tough questions that we're struggling with, and it's those very legacy costs. And like you mentioned, that change in a way of life that are weighing to a certain extent on these companies. So we're all aware of that. We've known this was coming for some time. And the auto companies have been asking for help for years, but haven't received help to deal with precisely this issue.
Though we have to, and I want to open the phones right here. I only had 30 seconds. I thought looked at the wrong clock. So that's a good thing. But the problem is, though, that, and before we go back to the phones here, Sarah, and I'd like Lester and Bala to jump in on this as well, is that, I mean, the auto industry, even though it's not to blame for all the crisis that they face at the moment in terms of credit, in terms of health insurance, and the health crisis in America, health insurance crisis in America, I mean, but there was an uncalcitrant auto industry when it came to CAF standards, building smaller cars, changing the way they do business, in the face of what was really a tsunami of new thinking in automobiles from Asia. I mean, so part of it, you do have to lay, I think, at the doorstep of Detroit. Not all of it. When I say Detroit, I mean the big three. Not all of it, but some of it has to live there, don't you think?
Well, you know, they will produce the cars that people are buying. And the SUVs that were being sold at a high rate over the last decade or so were high profit, and those were the kinds of cars people were buying. And the big three were just making some of these other cars because they were forced to, and they were really making them at a loss because people weren't buying those kinds of cars from those companies. Now, we can argue all night about why and the quality of the product or the like drivability or whatever, but when they look strictly at the balance sheet, that's what they were faced with. Now, you know, honestly, the market is now doing what CAFE standards and the government couldn't make them do. You know, for 30 or more years, CAFE standards were forced on the auto industry. Recalcitrant is a good word to describe it, but there really was very little increase that can be documented to the industry because of those standards. Suddenly now that gas, even though it's back down, when gas went up to $4 a gallon, and the market changed, that made the thinking at the top of the auto companies and all the auto companies change very, very quickly. So there's a balance there somewhere.
You were about to say something, Lester Spence.
Yeah, I think the argument that the automotive industry just makes cars that people want, I think that corporations spend literally billions of dollars not just advertising, but actually shaping consumer preferences. Right. So it's not that we have these just that we have these desires. I mean, who wanted a manicured lawn 60, 70 years ago? This type of stuff was all manufactured to a certain extent. And the automotive industry has the ability to shape preferences, maybe not as much as we would want in this context. But surely they have more power to shape consumer preferences than you're allotting to them. And then the second thing, really quickly, is that the automotive industry, like other industries, had the ability to move government to engage in more progressive policy on health care and social services. And they decided tactically not to. And that's another thing we can lay on their feet.
A quick flip, let's go to the phone center, 410-319-8888. Let's go to David and Laurel. You're on the air. You've been waiting a long time.
Yes. Well, I've enjoyed everything that everybody's been saying, and Some of what I had planned to say has been said, but I guess I'd like to say this, and that is, as Americans, we are all going to have to take a piece of this responsibility, all of us. I know that when I first got married, I was a diehard Buy American, and, you know, I had my Buick Regal, and mm-hmm. my wife was out by quality, and she had her Toyota, and I finally gave in, and I have a Honda because I got tired of going to the repair shop. And, you know, we're not going to be buying Humvees anymore, not when gas goes to $4 a gallon. It may be down now, but you know it's going back up. And, you know what, a bailout package isn't going to save American car companies if I don't decide to buy American, too. And we're all in this together. You know, you can blame unions, but I know I have health benefits and health care and all kinds of things as a result of unions. I don't belong to one, but the fact that unions exist made the middle class. That's why I have the benefits I have.
Mm-hmm.
And are they a little bit of the fault? Certainly. But not all of the cost of my car is to pay union wages. It's to give dividends and airline trips to CEOs. And it pays for a lot of things, research and things that are good. And we all have to take a piece of this. And I guess my last comment is, the other thing that we're paying for is, I've been a worker who's been moving from Boston to New Jersey to Maryland, trying to stay employed over the last 20 years. Because we've been downsizing and shipping jobs offshore for more than 20 years. Now, I'm one of the lucky ones who God has blessed wonderfully to stay employed. But a lot of my friends haven't. And the economy's in trouble, because lots of people are not only unemployed, but underemployed.
Mm-hmm.
You come off the unemployment rolls when you get another job, $20,000 less than you were making from the company you got downsized from. All of a sudden, somebody says, oh, well, you know, Billy's not unemployed anymore. Mary's not unemployed anymore. Well, they're making $20,000 a year less, and they have no health benefits with this company, yet they're not unemployed. And the truth is, what's showing up in the industry today, why all of the industries are having trouble, is most of us middle-class Americans over the 20 years are working harder and have less disposable income than we've ever had in our life.
David, I'm glad you held on for so long. We appreciate you being part of this show. Glad people are listening to us down in Laurel. Thank you so much. I think what he said is very, I mean, on target and very cogent. And this is, we're at a point now, I think, in America, with President Barack Obama, that is, he has a gift not to squander, which is what our caller was saying, which is for all in America to share this burden and weight to make it work.
Yeah.
But, you know, that gift's only going to last so long
yeah.
if we don't come up with the right plan.
That's right.
410-319-8888. And Alex, on your cell, you're on the air.
Hey, that last caller hit the nail on the head for the most part. A lot of people fail to realize that, you know, the value of the dollar and the fact that these automobile manufacturers have been working with the banks, and the banks have been working with the credit bureaus and so forth. You know, these financial institutions are just as much the reason why the automobile industry has gone downhill as the automobile industries themselves. I mean, that they've been helping to hold down the credit market by getting their profits off of these subprime, not only mortgages, but car loans. And a lot of people fail to realize that, you know. So, you know, for the most part, the last call that really hit the nail on the head, I'm not going to belabor the points.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's already heard them. But there really needs to be some credit reform in order for this country to start to look at who's benefiting and who's not. Because a lot of these financial institutions have taken a lot of profits, just like the oil companies have taken a lot of profits. They cry today about what the economy is doing to them now, but what happened to those profits yesterday?
Excellent thoughts, Alex. You wanted to say something, Bob, then we'll go around the room here.
I agree with you. The financial, there is a crying need for financial reform. Our banks, our insurance companies, the securities and exchange trading, they all have been given a free rein. Basically, there was very little regulation in the last 8 years. Some of the chaos that we see today is a result of that. So we really need to rethink the entire system and bring some sense of sanity and stability to the financial system. That can help all the industries and all the consumers.
Do you have a thought here? I want to, Sarah, I mean, I'm curious what you think, and then I'm going to go to Lester and go back to the phones, and what you think needs to happen now. What kind of bailout is needed, if any, and how does this have to be designed? Give us a very quick kind of minute sketch of that, Sarah, if you could, from your perspective in Chamber of Commerce in Detroit.
Sure. Well, there are two big pieces to this. First is what's on the table right now for Congress, which is a bridge loan. And I want to make that clear that what the auto companies are asking for is a loan to get them through the cash flow needs into next year, possibly through next year, until their new union contracts take effect in 2010, to change their cost structure significantly. Getting back to some earlier discussions about, you know, these guys need to change how they do business, they're definitely doing that. It's just some of these new contracts are phasing in and taking some time to get there. So that first and foremost is to give them the loan for cash flow to head off the total meltdown and bankruptcy. Secondly, earlier this year, Congress approved $25 billion to be used for the retooling. That money to make cars more fuel efficient. That money is going to be distributed by the U.S. Department of Energy, and they are in the process of making rules. While they have started that process, it could still be 6 months to 12 months before that money is actually put in the hands of the auto companies and auto suppliers to retool the industry and get it out there. We need to move up that timeline and ask the Department of Energy to get that going. You know, I've heard a number of folks say we need these fuel-efficient cars as soon as possible, if not yesterday. And the sooner we can get that out there, the better. And again, those are loans as well that we fully expect to repay to the taxpayers.
Bala?
I support the $25 billion for retooling, but I do not support the $25 billion more just to act as a bridge loan, because since if the union contracts are going to kick in, the new contracts in 2010, the auto industry, which is kind of bleeding like $5 billion a month, this $25 is not going to
do. And bleeding why, from your perspective?
A very poor business model. And they, you know, in the 50s, there was this thought that what's good for GM is good for the country. I believe some of it is still there. What we need is a complete restructuring of the, at least General Motors, to basically come out of this old ways of doing business.
You have a closing thought here for us? Lester Spence?
Man, so I'm going back home like next week for Thanksgiving. Sarah, I'll look you up. And all I'm thinking about is like, man, this is going to be a cold Christmas in Detroit. We have got this, but it's bigger than Detroit. It really, really is. And as we have to rethink our way of life. And on some level, restructuring the car, automotive industry isn't going to hit that. We got a bigger question.
It is a bigger question, and I wish that Congress and President-elect Obama and others would kind of start wrestling now with the public about how huge it is when it comes to health care costs, how that affects it, pensions of people, and more, and how you retool auto to fit the 21st century. Well, we have plenty of grist for another day. Sarah Hubbard, Bala Submaranian, and Lester Spence, thank all three of you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, and thank all of you for calling in and writing in and making this show what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We have additional help from Judith Lloyd. We're engineered this hour by Brian Boone. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows and additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.